And me dies with him. Then Publius Sue Caraval stands in the chaos. I know, as his lips curl back from his white teeth, as his eyes glimmer bright with long-hidden fervour, and his bloody finger extends in my direction, that he knew Dancer and I had come to terms. How? Murderer, the incorruptible wails. Tyrant! Tyrant! The surviving vox echo, pointing their fingers like blood-drenched scarecrows amidst the field of their dying compatriots. Tyrant! We flee in force. Optimates cluster around me and we ascend the stairs away from the charnel house. My internal comms swarms with dread. Citadel and Skyhall are under attack. Republic forces. 7th Legion shuttles taking fire. Warden forces firing on Lion Guard outside Moon. Echo of Ares reports their captain has been shot. Arch-Imperator Zahn moving on Augustan ships. Lake Silene has inbound Republic assault craft. Ships are going for Darrow's mother. Vox legions assaulting ones loyal to me. It is a coup. With Daxo pushing me along in the centre of a knot of optimates, I rush up the last of the stairs to the west door. We make the flats around the Senate pit and rush to the exit. At the head of a clutch of heavily armed Lion Guard, Holiday exchanges heavy fire outside the forum with warden elements. Taking casualties, they press up the stairs outside the forum as aerial soldiers in grav boots dogfight over the parks. But as they reach the top stair and make to meet us at the door, a 40-meter-tall Drakenjäger lands at the edge of the park. Its twin railguns train themselves on Holiday. She shouts to take cover. Too late. I watch in horror as metal slugs moving at 3 times the speed of sound make my Martian soldiers mist. The slugs shred the marble steps and skip up into the forum, raining splinters of rock down on us. I'm flattened by gold and grey senators who use their bodies to shield mine. Senator Tiberius T. Hahn screams as his arm is taken off at the elbow by a ricochet. The next one takes his torso off at the hips. From under their bodies, I see out the doors. The Drakenjäger is teetering sideways, a huge hole in its cockpit. From amidst the bodies of dead Lion Guard, Holiday turns her anti-tank rail rifle up the steps at the wardens blocking our escape. 5 wardens are cut in half. A 6th warden explodes in a shower of gristle and metal. His cape detaches and slaps wetly against the groaning marble door as it slides to trap us inside the forum. Daxo reaches the door along and hauls against it till the veins stand out in his neck and his fingers crack the stone. A shoulder pops from its socket. Run, you fools, he roars at us. I push the gold senators off me, but I'm too far from the door, and the mechanized hinges cannot be stopped even by a Telemannus. Go, I shout at him. Daxo, go! My heart breaks as Daxo looks at the narrowing sliver of salvation. His face is red from exertion. His lips pull back from his teeth. He could escape, abandon me, but instead, a calmness comes over him, and he releases his grip on the door. It seals with a loud thump, and he turns to me and shrugs. With my comm, I open a master channel to my entire security network. Black Cathedral, I say. Repeat, Black Cathedral. But the signal goes down. Daxo puts a hand on my shoulder. His eyes are fixed on something behind me. I turn in time to see a concussion detonate outside the east door. In the plaza beyond, the colourful crowd has disintegrated into a frenzied mob. The shield, Daxo whispers. Smoke billows. A shield pylon teeters sideways. Sparks shiver out from its sides, and with a blue shimmer, the barrier separating us from the mob disappears. Oh no. A tide of humanity rolls up the white steps toward the only open door. Senators scream and scramble to beat against the other doors for escape. The remnants of the Vox Populi, some 30 of their fringe zealots, huddle around Dancer's body down in the Senate pit. Publius is amongst them, his face wild with righteous rage as he shouts for the mob and points toward us as if he were some necromantic conjurer hurling his murderous spirits forward. "Optimates, to me," I shout. Barely half of them hear me. The rest have broken up amongst the forum to beat on the doors, to hide behind columns, to raise their hands in supplication to the mob that teems toward the open east door. Their faces sunburnt and pale, wide and narrow, eyes red and brown and orange, mad with communal rage. Their arms carrying bent bits of fences, stakes from propaganda signs, hammers, and even black market scorchers they roil toward us. A dozen in front, 100 behind, and thousands pushing them forward. I watch a blue senator tear herself away from her hiding place amongst the columns and stand bravely at the east door and face down the mob with an outstretched hand. "No violence," she declares majestically. "No violence," she repeats just before a red man caves her head in with an iron Vox pyramid on the end of a wooden pole. The mob swallows them. They all disappear, and all I can see is the iron pyramid rising and falling above the swarm. A pink senator falls. Frail bones shatter as he curls inward like a dying spider. They pull optimate senators from their hiding places and smash their heads open against the marble. Senators flee from them, tripping and falling, skinning their knees and prying themselves up to scramble away, their togas white but for the hems that are stained in blood, so that they look like the fluttering wings of red doves in flight. The obsidian senators, all women, all former warriors, join our lines with a solemn nod. "Virginia, stand behind me," Daxo says in a low growl. I step to his side. With a small laugh, he peels the wool of his toga as if it were made of paper. Free of the encumbrance, he stands bare-chested, bare-limbed, a monster clothed only in undershorts before the mob. His shoulders are broad as a thunderhead, his back muscled like a sunblood stallion's, the angels on his head glorious and golden and dancing down his spine to his lower back. But his huge hands are bare and empty. "Daxo!" I hand him the Dawn Scepter. He spins it, a meter of solid iron with the 14-pointed star of our republic glittering on the end. "Gold and obsidian, first rank. Grey, second," I shout over the furore as the mob runs around the sides of the Senate pit to reach us. Those soldiers amongst the optimates, many old and stooped, but sinewy and dogged in the ways of war, rustle forward to stand 15 abreast in velvet slippers and white togas to defend the cluster of thin-boned senators behind us. I pull on the metal tab underneath the left pocket of my jacket. My secondary razor slithers out of the spine of my jacket to form a meter and a third of rigid metal. I lean toward Daxo. "On my command, terror." The mob does not hit us in a wave. The wild vanguard was prepped. Pupils flaring with stims and intoxicants, they sprint headlong at us with homemade weapons, hammers and knives, a few with black market scorchers. A scorcher flares. White light ripples across the forum, and the obsidian senator to the left of me screams as her stomach ruptures open. She stumbles away, half her torso boiling. "Now," I tell Daxo, "lion heart," and death for 4 meters. He cleaves the red with the scorcher in half, with the edge of the Dawn Scepter's star. A man swings at him with a knife. Daxo is already past him, but reaches back to shatter his hand and take the knife. He wheels it down on the head of a brown in a hammer stroke, flattening the head, and then casually flicks the scepter back into and through the face of another man, before bringing it about in a wheeling stroke that shatters 3 more of the rioters. He kicks a brown woman in the chest. Her sternum collapses, and a bulge from his foot pushes out her back. The last, a young red man with piercings through the bridge of his nose, stabs at Daxo. Daxo catches the blade in his left hand. It sinks into the palm, but bends against the reinforced bone as Daxo pushes back till the man's straightened arm snaps like a twig. Daxo embeds the scepter in the man's chest and grabs the man's other hand. He pulls on both arms, lifting the man in the air so that he is eye to eye with Daxo, his feet kicking half a meter from the ground. With a roar, Daxo pulls off both the man's arms. The body drops to the floor, spitting blood. Daxo rips the scepter out of the man, pulling ribs with it, and beats his own bloody chest with gore-spattered hands.
Lionheart!
He spins the scepter, pointing it at the crowd.
Dogs! Traitors! In the name of your sovereign, disarm! Disarm!
The mob behind the massacred men skids to a halt, terrified of the gold monstrosity. All their lives they've known of gold power, but war is fast and smoky and small through a screen. They always suspected the myth of our violence overwrought. Now they see what our manners have protected them from. The courage in their numbers withers at the terrible sight of this machine of war unlocked from his civil chains. But the mob is a machine as well, and its engine of courage comes from those at the rear. They push forward, screaming and shouting, and firing over the heads of those terrified in the front, and the press breaks forward, dozens amongst them falling to be trampled by the weight of the distant brave. The mob hits more like mud than water. Seeping around Daxo, fighting to run away, heels skidding over bloody stone. My razor carves through the outstretched arm of a young man holding a scorcher, through the face of a fat woman with a rock, the neck of a screaming, terrified teenager with a mouth blue from cloud candy. Bodies push me back, and I chop madly, blindly at arms. They seep through. I fall back to swing again, but I collide with someone behind me, and I'm pushed forward into the bodies of those I've maimed, who wail and hold bloody stumps and are trampled by those behind them. I wheel and hack and slash against flailing limbs. A hammer hits my collarbone. Bone holds. Man dies. A knife digs into my cheek and breaks a tooth in half. Spit sprays into my eyes. Blood. Teeth bite my leg and metal digs into my calf. Searing pain. I stomp on someone until I feel something give. Not 10 meters away, Daxo kills and maims in a tyrannical whirlwind, like the kind Darrow and only a few others still living have ever seen in person, much less produced. I try to cut my way to him, but I don't have the mass. Bodies obscure me, hands pull at me, shoulders of screaming men subvert my balance as they hit my knees. The back of a head breaks my nose. I headbutt someone else and feel the weaker bone crumple. Sharp metal scrapes down my back, ribs and stabs repeatedly into my flank. I howl, pinched between bodies. My legs are caught by someone's arms and I'm wrestled from the side by a big red man, his whiskers scraping into my neck. I teeter sideways, pulled down by a mass of bodies. A gun goes off against my thigh. I feel pressure. They pin my sword arm to my side and bite and saw at my hand till the razor slips free. I crash to the ground under their weight, arms and legs unable to move against their grip as boots stomp on my head and kick my face. Sound goes in and out, my vision stuttering between black and the swarm of feet and legs at the claustrophobic underbelly of the mob. I swallow a tooth and bite the finger off a man. Virginia, I hear beyond the curses and shouts. Virginia! The big red man atop me twitches. The iron points of a bloody star erupt through his forehead. His eyes roll back into his head, and blood sluices onto me as Daxo pulls the Dawn scepter out of his crushed skull. Another man falls between us. Daxo seizes his belt and hurls him through the air like a doll. I glimpse my friend for a moment, his wild eyes set in that thoughtful face, and despite the horror around us, despite the anger in him, I see the panic of love. He will save me. He will protect me, like he did when he pulled me from the tossing surf as a girl. And then he is gone. Greatness borne down under a human wave that crashes down from all directions. A boot connects with my temple. My head lolls sideways. Something stabs through my cheek and takes 2 teeth. Numbly, I feel them tearing at my hair, my clothes, ripping off my boots, cutting my pants with knives and my razor, and the blade scraping my skin. 2 men rip off my jacket as a woman kicks at my face, and hands paw at my breasts and claw between my thighs. I black out in the darkness, feel hands lifting me up, punching me, jamming into my body. Then I am free of the mob, the press of bodies above me gone. I open swollen eyes and see through a crack in the darkness. Jeering faces swim beneath me, hands pass me above their heads like a trophy. Sharp objects stick into my buttocks, my thighs. Daxo, I murmur through broken teeth, mouth full of blood and mashed lips. Daxo. I see him again through the crowd. His huge body is splayed out on the ground, held down by a big obsidian with gold teeth, as four others stand over him, guarding a muscular red woman in a Hyperion sanitation uniform. Tall for a red, she hacks at Daxo's neck with a hatchet till his head dislodges. She holds it by its spine. Without looking, she flicks Daxo's head to the mob. He was a man who could have ruled worlds if he had even the smallest ambition for it, who chose to serve the people even though he despised them. He did that for me, and now his head is tossed around like an inflated toy ball. The golden angels dance no more on Daxo's crown. They are drowned in his blood. The woman turns to look at me. Even set in that face, I recognize her eyes through the red contacts. A demon from the past, now undead. Lilith, my brother's dog of war. She is alive. She is the queen of the syndicate. How? Lilith begins to laugh at me. With a disembodied moan, I tear my eyes away and look up for some escape to the sky. But it is hidden from me, behind the painted plaster, where my husband floats golden and glorious, with Severo at his side, giving his speech to the mob of Phobos, where he heard the heartbeat of humanity and exhorted it to violence, to war, to the taking of lives for liberty. All that fills my ears is the roar of the human ocean as it sings the song of my husband's first wife.
Chapter 32. Darrow. In wake. Heliopolis steams under the early morning sun. Though northern Helios still buckles under Orion storms, the monsoon clouds that drenched Heliopolis with torrential rain have slunk back to the Caliban Sea, leaving the city gleaming white. It might be lovely but for the fact that the rain was irradiated from nuclear warheads, and the air is so thick with humidity steaming in off the Bay of Sirens that the simple act of walking is like wading through pudding. My wounds are not yet healed. Everything aches. Nausea from antirads grips my belly. Sweat trickles down my back as I stand in a thick cluster of my officers to partake in the fading dirge. Before us, a sea of Martians sleep upon a bed of lavender. Spread across the tarmac of the spaceport south of Heliopolis, their faces are green and blue, their bodies distended by the sun, so that they look like inflated dolls. There is no triumph, no victory march for the dead. There is only this meager honor. Scarcely 100,000 of the 4 million lost to the sea, the sand, and the atomics have been gathered for the fading dirge. 10 square kilometers of lavender were cut from the southern latifundia by my Corps of Engineers to mask the smell of the bodies. It was meant to give some semblance of dignity to the departed as we say farewell to them together. There is no dignity here. A southerly wind prevails. As we beat our fists against our hearts, the ceremony disintegrates into farce as the dank stench of rotting eggs and used toilets drifts up from the bodies. The infantry maintain their ranks, but support and naval men and women, unaccustomed to the degradations of ground combat, waver, many upturning their stomachs onto the baking concrete. The bodies are arrayed to be cremated before our remaining ships of war. The battle-scarred Morning Star looms like a mountain, 1.5 kilometers tall, nearly 8 long. Four torch ships lie in her shadow, and the rickety remains of one destroyer. From atop her hull, welders shade themselves under the guns and pause their labor to watch. How many times has the Morning Star saved us? By the looks of her hull and the wounds she sustained it from the storm and the battle, I don't think she can do it again. Some will call the Battle of the Ladon a victory for the Republic. I cannot. With Naran falling the night before, we have lost all the major cities of Helios. 4 million of my men are missing or dead. Just over 5 million survive to huddle beneath the shields of Heliopolis. Supplies dwindle, especially the anti-rads. Most were in Tyche. Barely 1/3 of my men are fit for duty, even by our elastic standards. Our tank regiments are depleted, rip wings down to 200 operational craft, Drachenjägers reduced to 700. All that protects us from being bombarded is the shield overhead. All that protects us from being overrun are the storms beyond, and Atlantia's fear of what new horror I'll conjure. Despite our vulnerability, Atalantia has not opted for another frontal attack on Heliopolis. Instead, with us trapped inside, she extends her grip over the storm-ravaged continent and squeezes with the thoughtful patience of an anaconda. It means no relief fleet is on its way. But I must have hurt her badly. By our estimates, she lost twice as many as we did, most of the storm on the northern coast of Helios. The military camps of Venus can always provide her fresh bodies, but her precious veterans are irreplaceable. 13th Draconis, Ashgard, Fulminata, Zero Legion, the Iron Leopards. With the Iron Leopards captured or killed, 1/3 of the Ashgard drowned in Tyche, Fulminata pounded by Thraxa. Outside Heliopolis, how many more will she sacrifice for us? None, I wager. They are needed for the Republic. She will wait for reinforcements from Venus and use the raw recruits as a battering ram. There will be nothing we can do to stop them. All know it. Amongst the engineering officers, Harnassus stands like an old sea captain squinting into salt spray. Even though she suffered grievous burns in the battle, Thraxa's shoulders loom over the heads of the grey, gold, and red infantry commanders. But amongst the naval officers, there is an absence. For 10 years, the Blues orbited around Orion with the fidelity of moons to a planet. Now the planet is gone, and the moons drift untethered. They will need a new leader. But from where? Captain Pellis, a veteran of 10 years, might have flown the Morning Star through hell, but he has no leader. All my Imperators, save Harnassus, are gone. Half my Praetors. More than 2/3 of my Wing Commanders. Atalantia gnaws through officers who cannot be replaced. Officers who earned their bars and then their wings under Orion and me. Where will we find more like them? In the fat, filigreed Home Guard? In the jockeying politicians of Skyhall? I can only pillage the Ecliptic Guard so far before it is starved completely by children. I turn to my lancers and find no one there. Not Alexander, not Rona, only Screwface. He's taken weight off my shoulders since his return. Elated to be back with his own, he seems the only one with any energy to spare. I envy him that, and gave him Rat Legion to put his counter-espionage skill set to work, clearing the city of dissidents and any spies the Fear Knight snuck in. Where's Rona? I ask him. Tunnels again. Colloway? He split from the Med Ward at 0400, was wings up by 0430. He went out again? With a full squadron? Man won't rest until he finds Orion. I thought you knew. I look back at the bodies. I didn't. If he dies out there, How many heroes will we have left? A murmur goes up amongst the men. I follow the current of hands that rise to shade their eyes. A ripwing smudges smoke across the morning sky. Of the 12 ripwings that went in search of Orion, 3 stagger back. Colloway is not in his right mind. Since we took refuge in the city, he has been on the ground a total of 10 hours. The time it takes to eat 7 meals, receive 2 blood transfusions, exchange 7 crippled ripwings for fresh ones, and be locked in the med bay under guard. Lazy guard, apparently. Early morning condensation turns to vapor as Colloway and his wingmen set their battered ripwings on the concrete before the dead. Colloway's canopy is so mangled with enemy fire, it has to be welded off. When he's free, he bypasses the ladder and slides down his wing before coming around to the belly of the ripwing, where a bloated body is clutched in its towing claw. Colloway pries the body from the towing claw and tries to carry it. She is too heavy, even in the light gravity. He stumbles, and I find myself moving from the officers to reach him. Dozens of others join, including Screwface and Thraxa, but not Harnassus. He watches, stone-faced, from his officers, unable to forgive Orion, or me, for the storm and the millions of civilians it killed. Seawater is not kind to a dead body, nor are fish. But on Orion's swollen right hand is the trident ring I gave her when I named her Navark of the fleet. It rests on my shoulder as we carry her to the field of the dead and lay her amongst the lavender and corpses of fallen ripwing pilots. Colloway falls to his knees there. At first, I think it is from his exertion. Then he breaks into sobs. I squat behind him, knowing there is nothing to say. I take him by the shoulder to lead him away, but he thrusts my hand off and wheels on me.
+24, sir, he says. But they'll just send more. There are no more Orions.
He storms away from the funeral, making it halfway across the tarmac before collapsing. Medikai rush to him and bear him away toward the city. 24 makes 193 kills in 6 days, Thraxa says with a whistle, a feat which will never be encroached upon in our time. As others grow numb, she grows callous. I stare after Colloway. Despite his natural laziness, there has always been a fever behind his eyes. Even back on Luna, with a Hyperion sprite splayed across his lap. I suspected it was a fever for kills, chasing some imaginary number where his soul would finally be quenched and deem it enough. Today is the first time I realized the number isn't counting up. It's counting down. How many more can he kill before he goes? I look back on Orion's body one last time. It is a horrible thing to see someone so full of life, so important in yours and those of others, pummeled by death. The corrosion of the sea was cruel. It is no comfort to know this thing is no longer her, just the rotting shell of what held a miracle of a soul. Does she go to Io and Ragnar and Fichtner? Or is she simply gone? I do not know. Nor do I know how I will go on without her. I feel cold despite the sun, desperate to feel the warmth of my family, my wife, my son. Knowing how short our time in the light is, am I the greatest of fools to not spend every moment by their side? Thraxa lights a burner.
Here's for you, old girl. How many kills you suppose you got? Bet it was more than 193.
Fighting the instinct to break Thraxa's jaw, I turn away from her and return to the officers. Soon the warning siren blares. The legionnaires and I turn our heads. Bright white light flares from the morning star, washing away the meager light of morning. And when we turn back, their comrades are nothing but ashes. The smell of ozone sanitizes the air, and their comrades walk forward to scrape the ashes of their friends into canisters in hopes of one day giving them back to Mars. Not one of us believes we'll ever see home again, but they sing nonetheless. Defense barricades and screening facilities have been erected around the mouth of the Tyche Heliopolis Gravloop station, which towers at the east end of the water plaza. With the power severed in Tyche, the loop's cars stranded many refugees in the tunnel. I stood in silence, watching our first convoys ferry the refugees through. I thought it would be a miracle if Alexander saved 1,000, but the convoys continued to flow for nearly 3 days, families and children of all colors, each sharing the same story of the Griffin Knights who held back an army to give them time to escape the sea. Whether or not they know we summoned that sea is another matter. Some blame the society, some us, others blame nature herself. Eventually, the flow became a trickle, and the trickle became no one at all, and the fragment of me that held out hope submitted to reality. Alexander will not appear staggering behind the last survivors with a limp, a wry smile, and somehow perfectly coiffed hair. He is drowned in the sea. Sentimentality is no reason to allow this potential enemy highway to continue to exist. How long has she been here? I asked the centurion in charge of the barricade. A red. He wears a bandage over his eye and a necklace of red charms around his neck. A rat skull is most prominent. Rat Legion. Toughest of those who fought in the rat war in the tunnels of Mars. Of course, they survive the storm, and labor while the others lick their wounds.
Going on 6 hours, sir. She's in the atrium. Do you need an escort?
No, we'll be out in a minute. I put Rat Legion on R&R. What are you doing here?
19th lost most of their men to a gravity bomb. Thought they wouldn't mind us picking up the slack, sir.
I nod. After holding Heliopolis against Ajax's army for half a day, if anyone deserves rest, it's Rat Legion.
Prepare the charges.
With my bodyguards scanning the surrounding roofs for snipers, I head up the station's main steps. I find Rona sitting against the base of a broken statue inside the atrium. The right side of my niece's head is shaved from where the surgeons repaired the gash a gray digger bullet made as it tore open her helmet.
Aren't you supposed to be in the med ward? I ask.
Ain't you supposed to be running an army?
She chews her nails as she watches the stairs leading up out of the tunnel. Can I sit? She shrugs, and I slide down next to her with a sigh.
Didn't want to miss the princess's dramatic entrance, she says.
If he were coming by tunnel, he'd be here by now.
I know.
Then you know we have to collapse the tunnel. It would be difficult to explain to my brother why I did it on his daughter's head.
Yeah.
She swallows, thinks about saying something, then forgets it. We sit in silence, watching the stairs. In truth, I've been afraid to see her since we took the city. I'm not so distracted I couldn't see the tension between her and Alexander was growing into something else. For two people who can't stand each other, they certainly found enough reasons to always be in the same room. He may still have taken the Kylar Pass, I say.
I know what's what. Even if he got through the storm and the Votum, those mountains will be crawling with Gorgon.
She looks over at me.
If it had been me instead of Alexander, would you have let me go?
My first instinct is shame, because I've always resented the sort of gold Alexander represented. Haughty, entitled, rich. But it wasn't enmity that sent him to Tyche.
It was respect.
Yes. You didn't just dispose of him? She asks plaintively. Of course not.
That answers something for her.
Such an asshole. Just when he starts being worth a damn.
She shakes her head and looks once more at the stairs. All right. Slag it. She forces herself up. She wobbles, still woozy from the operation. I steady her, and we walk out together to join the Centurion behind the barricade.
What's the final refugee count? I ask the Centurion.
83,426 souls, sir.
83,426 souls, I say to Rona. Not many are lucky enough to know how much their life is worth. She gives a small nod of appreciation. I signal the Centurion. The engineers go to work, and soon 2,000 meters of tunnel caves in on itself. Rona watches dust billow out from the mouth of the station, and then turns to me at attention.
Request permission to return to duty, sir. I'm no good to you in the med bay.
Granted. She nods and heads back to my transport. She looks so small against the towering statue of Poseidon. The god of the water plaza holds up 99 discs of water and thousands of thirsty birds. Rona disappears inside the shuttle. She's a soldier now, like me. I linger to witness the last of the rocks settle. Knowing that Alexander is dead, that those people he saved will soon forget him or may die yet in the siege, I wish for one small moment that I were a young man again who could charge forward nourished by his own righteousness. That man would damn the danger and search for Alexander, as Colloway searched for Orion. But that man would have died in the desert and taken all his men with him. That man isn't what my army needs. Hell, I don't know what they need except for a miracle. I turn and head back to my transport, dragged forward by the weight of the day.
West of the city, between the Bay of Sirens and the Old City, squats the 4-century-old Votum government complex known as the Mound. It is a heavy basilica straddled by a half-kilometer-tall statue of the city's patron god, Helios. Each of the 14 spikes on his sun crown stretched the length of 10 men to puncture the blue sky. His left hand holds a scepter, and the right moves according to the path of the sun, so that at sunset he will cup it in his palm as it sinks beyond the horizon. As if any man had such control.
The rain is radioactive, Hanassa says, dumping a box of dead cats on the table of the old Votum war room.
Thraxa paces along the arched windows, more interested in the bunkers our claw drills are carving than the inconvenient report. We are all bald by now.
We eat here. Thank you very much for the drama, Thraxa says.
Hanassa grumbles on.
Fallout from the atomics used locally. So far, the golds are scrubbing the stratosphere, so there's limited risk of permanent global contamination. But we're in trouble. Orion drowned half our anti-rads in Tyche before we could evac them. The Gorgons eliminated another third in that bombing before we rounded them up.
Sweat soaks Harnassus's dirty uniform. He looks even more exhausted than I feel. Like me, he put on a brave face for the men at the funeral, but the Gorgons who snuck in before we locked down Heliopolis are giving us hell, and native insurgencies have sprung up faster than Screwface can put them down.
Bottom line, we don't have enough for our men and the civilians.
Why are you always bringing me bad news? I ask him. Harnassus's bitterness has increased exponentially since Orion summoned the storms.
I sympathize with the man, even if I find him a damn thorn in my side.
Hate the storms all he likes,
The only reason we have an army at all is because of its cloud and electrical cover. Because I'm the only one not sucking your balls.
Oh, do say it more directly, Thraxa says, as if it adds gravitas.
I rub my shoulder as I receive an anti-rad shot from the yellow medicus. The nausea has come in waves over the last days. I thought it would be starvation that ended us, not fallout. On my way to the mound, I saw men with red-stained handkerchiefs, others sitting in the shade with their heads in their hands as they queued for the latrines. Harnassus plods on. Engineering Corps believes the symptoms will spike dramatically. We're already experiencing weakness, nausea, and headaches. It will progress to vomiting and diarrhea, which I've already got. The civilians will soon figure it out. We'll have full-on riots soon as the deaths start.
There've already been riots,
Thraxa says, turning her eyes from the mountains to the refugee-choked streets of Heliopolis.
If we share our supplies, we won't make it 2 weeks. We're already on half dose, already denying it to 5,000 men too far gone. These people are not our allies.
She's not wrong. We are not wanted here. Tyche was a fine enough home, but of the Mercurian breed, Heliopolitans are the most cantankerous, cruel, and noisy. Save Cleirastes, it is hard to remember even one who welcomed us when we took the planet. And with Orion's storm and our waning campaign, the teeth have come out. My soldiers dare not go anywhere alone at night. Mobs have already tried storming the food centers I set up. Even Cleirastes has spurned my calls, lurking in his palace above the city, after haranguing me about betraying my oath not to raise the storms past primary horizon. He doesn't believe Orion went rogue. I find myself thinking about Pax, and if I would have sent him into Tyche, like Alexander. Would I spend my boy as I've spent so many others? Didn't I spend him in a way, by not returning home? It all seems so transactional, war. Did I spend my boy the day he was born by the virtue of my role in the Rising? I can only hope that my wife has found him by now, that they are together and that the fleet is coming for us. Hope. Hope won't bring back Orion or my men. But my wife deserves it. And here, shorn of everything else, I am sustained only by her strength.
We brought this upon them, Telemannus, Onassis says, cooling himself with an absurd peacock fan. All power, including that of the climate control, is being conserved for the defense. First we invade their planet and bring war to their cities. Then we sink a coastline. Now we let them wither as we huddle in their city.
Did I create the Mercurians to be of insubstantial fiber? Thraxa asks.
No. They lack the warrior constitution to fight for their own freedom. Mercurian Reds are anemic compared with ours. Well, if they want to be slaves so badly, let them embrace their own degradation, I say. Thank you, Ashlord. Let me get this proper. Because they do not agree with us, we let their children decay and their families die.
Harnassus sneers. The two have been at each other's throats since we returned to Mercury. The enmity has grown worse in Heliopolis. Harnassus considers Orion's storm a genocide. Thraxa thinks it the noblest of sacrifices.
The populace is a time bomb, Thraxa says. You want to keep it ticking. We could just let it fizzle out.
She looks to me. They're going to take up arms against us. We can make sure right here, right now, they can't lift those arms.
I always suspected you were a democrat of convenience, Onassis replies. At least Orion's villainy can be traced to anger. Yours is just cold blood.
Cold blood wins wars, Thraxa says.
You should know. You're no snowy virgin yourself, not after Echo City.
Harnassus's jaw clenches.
If the Vox had more cold blood and less envy, the fleet would never have been split and vulnerable to Atalantia, and we'd never be in this quagmire. Your friends are to blame, Harnassus. You are to blame. And now you quibble and pretend like this is all Darrow's fault. The hypocrisy disgusts me.
Harnassus stands to his full, unimpressive height.
I will not stand by and watch children decay.
Then you will lie on your back, shitting blood, as your men decay, Thraxa says, while my men do not.
Enough, I snap. You're like children. At least try. For me.
The door opens, and Screwface prances in.
Apologies, he says,
stripping off his scarlet Heliopolitan scarf and riding gloves.
Two Gorgon were caught in the water filtration plant. Blackguards thought the Reds would be on their heels from rad poisoning. Sturdy Rat Legion is sturdy. I got this place on lock.
He flops down in a chair and wrinkles his nose at Harnassus's cats.
What did I miss?
We're just cutting to business, I say. Harnassus, you've taken stock of the engineer and support legions. Thraxa, the armored and heavy infantry. Screw the special ops and navy. What do you perceive our chances of escape to be? They grow quiet. Screwface looks at his manicured hands.
That low. You'd never guess we just won our greatest statistical victory of the war.
We just don't have the ships to escape, Harnassus says. 4 torch ships, 1 destroyer. The Morning Star may never fly again. If we take out all extraneous systems of the other ships, we could just barely fit the men.
Doesn't matter anyway. Just 2 of Atalantia's dreadnoughts will make us atoms, and those torch ships of theirs are faster than the Star. If we get to space, they'll hunt us down. But we won't get to space. They have the gravity well. If a single ship made it to orbit, it would be a miracle.
What if we acquired their ships? Thraxa asks, looking to Screwface.
Get a team to orbit and try to take 1 or 2 of those dreadnoughts.
His eyes go wide and he whistles.
I wouldn't volunteer personally. They're blasting anything that comes within 100 clicks. And the Gorgon have response teams on board. Atalantia's just waiting with a net.
She knows me too well for that to work this time, I say to Screw's nod of agreement. If we saw an opening, it would likely be a trap. The noose is tightening. If we move outside the shield, she'll stomp on us like bugs.
I intended to move the ships in the storm cover, under the veil of electronic interference, to prepare some devilry for Atalantia. But the level of storm Orion summoned made that impossible, and even killed 4 of our torch ships. Now all my cards are used up. They know it. I know it. And I have the sneaking suspicion Atalantia knows it. There are no tricks left to play. We are in a cage, I say. All that can deliver us is the Sovereign. And I believe she will.
You believe? Thraxa says. She won't move the Senate. The Vox will sacrifice us. Dancer will let us die to get back at you for the Sons of the Rim.
No one is coming.
Sadly, Harnassus agrees.
I know, Dancer. He'll wear diamonds before he risks Atalantia's trap, not after that false peace. He's prouder than he thinks. I know neither of you want to hear it, but after that battle, we're not an army anymore. We're just bait on a hook. All's left to do is remove the bait.
Surrender?
Thraxa asks in horror. Harnassus's lips barely move.
Perhaps.
If we surrender, they will kill all of us, Thraxa says. Worse, Screw says.
I would know. I've watched her play with howlers.
He blinks and covers his unease with a smile for a seagull that lands on the balcony outside.
They would torture and kill us for, Harnassus agrees, but they will need labor to rebuild after this. Not all of the men will survive, but some will. Some is better than none. He meets my eyes. At least tell me you will consider it. I lean back in my chair as Thraxa and Screwface hold their breath. Harnassus, in order for me to consider that, I would have to continue to make the same mistake that put us here. Doubt my wife. I have done that before to the detriment of us all. With me taking shortcuts, Severo said. And I would have to make a mistake I have not made in 15 years. Fool myself into believing slavery is better than death. I will not do that. Thraxa nods. The tension releases from Screw. He's afraid of Atalantia, more afraid than he'll ever admit. Harnassus says nothing. He disagrees. I was ready to sacrifice this army to break theirs, because I did not believe the Republic would come. Because I thought killing them would give the Republic the best hope in this war. In that moment of choice, I listen to you, Harnassus. If we save this army, it will be a victory to inspire the world. We will save this army by having faith in our Republic, in our sovereign. There will be no surrender, no escape plan that exposes the army so Atalantia can drive a stake through our hearts. My wife said the ships would come, so they will come. Until then, we share what we have with the civilians. It won't last the week, Thraxa objects. We share what we have with the civilians. A knock comes at the door, and Rona steps through looking frightened. Sir, we've received a tight beam from the Anihilo. Screwface's head snaps in her direction. Atalantia has requested an audience. Her eyes dart to the floor. She says it concerns your wife. Chapter 33. Darrow. The Devil's Deal. It's disappointing we didn't get to meet in person, I say to Atalantia. I had such plans for you.
Yes, well, I'm not terribly fond of having conversations when I'm on the back foot. And I will admit, you put me there.
Lady, I fucked you up. She grimaces.
Indeed, but that is the nature of you and me, gamblers both. I won the first hand, you won the last. Though I must admit, I am surprised you had the temerity to use those machines. What devious designs freedom requires. One must worry about the strength of a principle when it must compromise itself so often to survive. At least we're consistent, eh?
I do not tell her it was Orion's decision. More the monster I appear, more hesitant will she be in encroaching upon Heliopolis. Today she is in a playful mood, which worries me. I know I hurt her worse than she's letting on.
Her eyes are of warm gold, and her mouth sensuous in a way that reminds me of Nithhaga, the serpent of obsidian myth who gnaws at the root of the world tree.
She walks around her absurd gold throne, tracing her nails along its spikes. The snake that she customarily wears around her neck coils around the throne's arms. She laughs at a private joke, then makes it public.
Don't you find it peculiar? The human conviction that we are the heirs of history instead of paragraphs that are almost over. A survival mechanism, no doubt. My father knew otherwise, of course, she continues. He was even more avid an historian than Atlas with his little library. That's what made them fond of each other, you know. My father could read Sumerian, Akkadian, Ebalite, Hurrian, Hittite, Ugaritic, First Chinese, and 32 other dead languages. And all he learned from them was an aversion to risk. He was never fond of betting at all on a roll of the dice, like we do. But one story did stick. He told it to me when, as a girl, I had it in my mind to brawl with Urza when she rode my favorite sunblood stallion without asking.
She pulls the snake from the arm of her chair and lets it coil around her neck.
In the years between 280 and 275 BC, a young king dared to resist the expanding Roman Republic. Her finger traces along the snake as it moves. This king was beloved by his men, shrewd in the ways of battle, much like you. To the surprise of the known world, he enjoyed initial successes against the legions, appalling them with fearsome beasts from barbarous lands. The snake lifts its head toward Atalantia's face. War elephants and the like. But these battles cost the king. He could not call up more men from his lands, and elephants are so few. In contrast, the Romans could draw from an immeasurable well of manpower. The snake's mouth slowly opens before Atalantia. The king soon realized this, and when congratulated for a victory, he cried out, "If we are victorious in one more battle with the Romans, we shall be utterly ruined." Atalantia extends her tongue to take the smallest prick from the right fang of the snake. She shudders as the microdose of poison races through her bloodstream. Her voice creeps towards sensuous as she slinks toward her chair and sinks into its embrace. "I measure you know this king's name."
"Pyrrhus," I answer. "Don't fret. I didn't waste your tax dollars to get a bad education."
"I presume you know, then, what happened next."
"Rome consumed Pyrrhus because of his victories. But there is one problem. You are not Rome, are you?" I say.
"We are greater than Rome. You may have wounded my legions, but my fleet would eviscerate the Scepter Armada of 10 years ago. With the reserves on Venus, my legions dwarf Octavia's standing army. We were a shadow of ourselves in her time, a tiny fraction of peerless scarred, holding up the morbid obesity of the pixies. But you have sharpened our edge, given me a new generation of soldiers who want nothing more than to be the hand that killed the reaper. The first is already in the fray. In 4 years' time, 500,000 will turn 16. You know the breeding protocols my father made law when Luna fell. 600,000 triplets raised with one thing on their mind. Subjugation."
"I wasn't talking about the society, Atalantia. I was talking about you. You are what's lacking." She smiles, welcoming the critique. "Just the least loved daughter of a butcher. I imagine you have convinced yourself it was because you are misunderstood. The survival mechanism, I imagine. But I knew Magnus. I fought him for almost a decade. We had chats like this, he and I, though he never babbled like you. And we had a mutual understanding to not atomize every plot of ground we couldn't take. You were not misunderstood by your father, Atalantia. You were simply disliked. Azure was his pride. Moira was his joy. You were just there with your silk and your Venusian orgies, acting out to get attention. And now you're his last resort. The pitiable last sentence of a family saga that is almost over." Her mouth takes on a truculent expression. "Even if you beat us here, the world has changed, and there is no place for you in it." "No," she snaps. "Your civilization is a clumsy design. Given liberty, each man will seek his own delight. Few indeed are the men whose delight is war."
"Your civilization, then, does not want war. Our civilization is an efficient engine. It wants what I want. And what do you think I want?"
She smiles, not because she knows she is right, but because she knows something I don't. For a woman with such a thin reputation before all this began, she has changed. The frivolity is gone.
but the capricious cruelty natural to her spirit remains, emboldened now by her training under her father, by her collaboration with Atlas. You may have won a victory, but your situation is untenable. You are treading water, she says. I understand it makes sense, knowing what you know. You believe your wife is coming for you, that she and Severo will save you, as they always have. I have beliefs, too. I believe in beauty, above all things, and I believe your religion of democracy to be a disease that deceives you, that devours itself every time it has infected a civilization. Athens, the American Empire, the Indian. I proposed to my father that exposing this disease would cauterize it far more thoroughly than warfare. He was dubious. A pity he never saw sins of the past come to fruition. Atalantia claps her hands together, and her face disappears to reveal my wife speaking on the floor of the Senate. She looks younger than I remember, pure and dazzling, when my world has become nothing but so much dust. In fact, everything seems absurdly white and clean. The robes of the senators, the marble, the air itself. Daxo rises to speak, and then my old friend, Dancer. I sense something is wrong long before the blood spews from his mouth, and with creeping dread that mutates into abject revulsion, I watch the Senate disintegrate into a horror more appalling than I could ever imagine. The mob devours the Optimates. They even sing Io's song as they bear my dying wife upon a sea of bloody hands. I stare at her, at Daxo's head tossed about like a rubber ball through the crowd. I have felt this once before, when Io swung upon the gallows, as if the foundation of my being were gone, and I glimpsed for one small moment the reality of my existence. There is no life without that woman. There is just a cold world, and the ugly creatures who fight for its scraps. I buried my wife in Lycos. I took her down from the gallows and placed her remains in the dirt of the garden we found together, knowing it would be my death. But that was the boy. The man is broken, but he is not allowed to break. I blink as the Senate Hall erodes into a flurry of light particles that coalesce into the face of my enemy. Your work. She touches her chest. Subcontractor. For the culprit, I suggest you look a little closer to home. Even I couldn't poison the togas of that many senators. I wonder what they used. Anyway, I call it the Day of Red Dove. She frowns in pity. Poor little Sisyphus, pushing that boulder uphill for so long. It is beautiful, in a way, to see a man struggle against natural law, to see what human will can accomplish, and then to see your face now. She shudders with pure pleasure. No betraying inflections, no micro-expressions of grief. Simple obduracy, despite the dread clawing at the back of your eyes. A doomed army, a lost child, a dead wife. She wags a finger heavy with rings at me. That is a peerless guard. How much more gravitas he has than all the squabbling rats of democracy. I assume you will be broadcasting this to my army, an empty voice says from my mouth. She shrugs as if to say it is out of her hands. I would not dare interrupt the democratic process. Did not Virginia once say that transparency is the heart of the thing? You poor creature. All these years, you must have felt so trapped. Knowing what needed to be done, but unable to do it because of people weaker than you. If you had just marched your legions into the Senate instead of chasing after my father, you could have won this. Once you had the power, you could have remade the world with your wife at your side, however you saw fit, and put your son on the throne. But that is the noble lie of democracy, isn't it? The belief in humanity, even though humanity is a screaming, selfish mob. I love humans, truly. But humanity... She shivers. I needed to see your face as you realized we were right all along. It is true beauty. Is my wife dead? If not dead, scheduled to die at the hands of maniacs. Who leads them? Publius? It seems impossible for Dancer to be dead. What then of my son? What then am I? A creature so single-minded that he left his wife and child to be torn apart by a mob? I convinced myself my duty was here, and it would be selfish to return to Luna. I deluded myself into believing in the virtues of a republic that is nothing but a sham. Was that just an excuse for me to carry on my bloody path? Virginia is not coming, Atalantia says. Her voice is harsh, done with its play. Severo is not coming. No one is coming. Disarm your forces, assemble your men south of the city, lower your shields, and submit to your fate with dignity. If you do this, I will behead you and your high command with proper ceremony. The rest of your men will be spared and put to labor according to their nature in rebuilding the planet you have left in tatters. If you commit suicide, this offer for your men is forfeit. If you reject my offer, I will drop atomics on Heliopolis and kill every man, woman, child, and dog for 200 kilometers. Even the cockroaches won't survive. This is the only mercy you will receive. Bluff, I say robotically. I beg your pardon. Rhea was one thing. This is Heliopolis. Heliopolis, Heliopolis, Heliopolis. It is a sty. A reliquary for the past, no matter how much that traitor Glerastes opines on its virtues. All I need is the metal in those mountains, your life, and those of that Telemannus bitch and that ugly orange bastard. She hesitates. And that beautiful colorway of yours on a leash. As for Mercury, she makes a face. And Mars? Helium can be mined in hell for all I care. As long as my bathwater is warm, I'll never notice. The horror of an entire generation of Reds slaving in an irradiated wasteland overwhelms me. Mutations. Death by 30. That cannot be how this ends. You are not a sovereign, I say flatly. You are just glue that barely holds together the 200. If you destroy Heliopolis, the votum will decry you. How many of those 200 will wonder what you'll do to their cities? How would Julia Albellona like you atomizing Olympia? How would the Carthii feel about a mushroom cloud over Harmonia? No, I say with rising anger. If you nuke us, you will be deposed. But you need to leave, don't you? So desperately, you can feel it in your bones. The Republic is in turmoil. You could drive a nail through it if you could just use your ships. Yet they're stuck here, guarding me like 2-bit tin pots. Is it because I put the Minotaur on Venus? Is it something else? Or maybe it's just that no matter how many strapping young girls you send after me, all you get back is piles of meat. You need us to surrender because you're afraid of me, and even more afraid of becoming Pyrrhus yourself. Perhaps, she says, but it's your bet. I replay the conversation between Atalantia and myself to the officers of my high command. Screwface straddles the balcony outside, his desert shades hiding his eyes. No aides lined the war room. The coffee is forgotten at a side table. The day of red doves has streamed on every screen in Heliopolis that has power. It is the only signal from beyond our cage. They mock us from orbit. But this conversation is what matters. The image dissolves, leaving darkness on the faces of my commanders. Parnassus slumps in the chair to my right. Thraxa stares at a fly hovering over a vine by the window. She has not spoken since she learned Daxo has died. The news has rattled her in a way nothing else ever has. What of her mother, her father, her sisters? Until now. My voice betrays me. I clear my throat. Until now. Our strategy was based upon the belief that the Republic was on its way. I do not believe it practical to continue in this assumption. I have reason to believe that Publius is an agent of Atalantia's, or that the events that took place in the Senate were the product of her designs. The Vox Populi are compromised. I would caution you against recognizing the authority of any element on Luna. I look at Harnassus, knowing Atalantia will likely beam him a message from Publius and the surviving Senate demanding surrender. We have been given an offer with a 24-hour clock, an offer that we have no reason to believe our enemy would honor. I pause, knowing what I am about to say is true, but feeling a coward nonetheless. I do not believe that I can chart an unbiased course, given the situation. I wave a hand as Thraxa and several others rise from their seats in protest. Just let me get this out. Colloway and Harnassus remain absolutely still. Of the two, I can't tell which looks worse, though the Ripper pilot is certainly drunk. I hear Screwface had to pull him from a brothel to get him here. An army is not a democracy. But given our situation, I do not believe it should be despotism. I try to look around the table, but find it difficult to meet their eyes. I fell into Atalantia's trap. I brought them here. I sowed the seeds of my wife's end and the end of our republic. I may not have done it alone, but it hardly matters. Most of you have been with this army as long as I have. It is your family as much as it is mine. You will decide its fate. I will accept any decision you make. The only plea I offer is that you decide based on what is best for our men, and then the Republic. With that, I leave Thraxa, Harnassus, Colloway, Screwface, and the rest of the High Command in the High War Room to decide my fate and that of the Free Legions. I walk along the lower balconies where night mist beads on the stone walls. The waves crash all around the roots of the building. Both were made by man. Perhaps at first in hope to give our species a new home to live and to love. But in time, I don't know when, their creation became a vanity of will, and in the shadow of that vanity, man grew lesser for having more, lesser for mastering the keys of creation, because he mistook himself for a god and cared less for his people and more that his works endured. Have I done the same? With a great sucking sound, the black water pulls back to reveal the work it has done to the roots of the stone after all these years. And then the waves crash back. A cavernous solitude makes a home in my chest, where once there was only purpose that made far too little room for my boy and my wife. I return to my room and take Pax's key from my luggage. I wrap its chain around my neck and hold it as I stare at the ceiling.
Chapter 34 Lysander Shadows of War. Are you awake or asleep, Lysander? I'm not in the desert. I am at Lake Silene. Snow clings to the evergreens. It makes the stones slippery under my feet. My legs tremble as I haul myself up the stairs that wind up the cliff from the lake to the house. I drop a stone the size of my abdomen atop a cairn. My hands are bloody and shaking. It is the winter after my parents died. I look up to see the severe face of my grandmother. I am terrified of her, but desperate for her approval. Even now, knowing what she did, the boy in the memory cannot hate her. He is too afraid to hate. I thought the week would be just for Arja and me. I never get her to myself. Atalantia had taken Ajax to Echo City to watch the water races. I thought Arja and I would take the horses north, but Grandmother has come back from Hyperion to continue my lessons. She is inescapable. I asked you a question. I am awake. Are you? How many crows are in the trees that line the steps? I look to Arja for help. She watches evenly from her perch on a fallen log. Will you look to Arja every time you need saving? I do not know how many crows there are. You do not know. I look down. Never manifest shame physically. Look at me. There's no anger in her face. There never is. How many owls are there? Hawks? Squirrels? I don't know, Grandmother. Do you really think you've earned the right to use contractions yet? She leans forward. Why do you not know? I will answer, since your tongue is lead. Your mind was asleep. Do you at least know how many steps there are?
431.
How many turns?
17.
Are you certain?
Yes, Grandmother.
Good. You know something, at least. Pick up a rock.
I obey. It weighs half as much as my body.
Close your eyes and run back down the steps.
Octavia, Arja whispers.
You have already spoilt your churlish spawn, Arja. Let us not ruin the batch. Is something the matter, Lysander? You said there are 431 steps. How many times have you run them? 1,000? 10? This should be no difficulty. Begin.
I surge downward. Knowing this, I can do. I can impress her. My steps are confident, even in the ice, even with the weight. I see the steps burned into the backs of my eyelids. I make it 321 steps before something on the steps starts. There's a flutter of movement that slaps into my face. I lose my balance. The weight of the stone is unforgiving. It pulls me forward. When I open my eyes, I am at the bottom of the steps. The bone of my right arm is out of the skin. It looks curiously pale. I begin to shudder. Arja is at my side, holding me. My grandmother descends the steps.
Arja?
His bones haven't fully...
Arja!
Arja lets me go, and I lie in the snow, staring up at my grandmother.
Stand up.
I struggle to my feet and look her in the eye.
Why did you fall?
I cannot speak for the pain.
Recede into your mind's eye. Exist with the pain, then let it draw your inner pupil to tighter focus.
I do as she demands. The pain does not lessen, but it no longer clouds. Its current pulls my mind narrower and constricts my concentration to retrace the memory. Sure enough, I find the outlying variable, a slight crunch, as I descended the 316th step just before the crows.
You put feed on the steps for the crows, I whisper. Good. But are you not in control of your own body? Why did you let me dictate where you fell? If you were awake, You would have sensed the crows were not in the trees any longer. You would have felt the seed underfoot and adjusted to the fresh variable.
She bends down.
You have a brain like mine. That is why you are my heir. That is why I have made you my son. But you must never let your mind sleep. Your mind's eye must rove without rest. Even as you speak, eat, move, it is not enough for it to collect data. It must digest it as a sub-function, or you will miss something and become a slave to another.
She kneels to look me eye to eye.
You are known. Another will always seek to bridle you with fists, with kisses, with tricks.
She brushes snow from my shoulders and pain comes into my eyes.
The tragedy of the gifted is the belief. They are entitled to greatness, Lysander. As a human, you are entitled only to death.
She stands.
Now, are you awake or asleep?
Awake.
Prove it. Again.
I walk suspended between the past and the hard reality of the desert. There is pain, more than I thought possible. The left half of my face is a ruin of melted meat. It is swollen with fluid that expands the skin to bursting. Pus leaks through the bandage Kalindora helped me attach. My left eye is blind and obliterated. Bits of melted metal have hardened over much of the wound.